Thursday, November 15th, 2012, at 12:39 a.m. in my house in Oregon. I wanted to... There's been some things that have happened in my life in the past couple of days that brought home kind of the reality of how human I am and how human everybody else is. So I wanted to discuss, talk about shock. Not so much shock in terms of war or combat. I wanted to discuss shock relative to you and me, to every day, to life. If I sit here and I talk about combat, then the only person that's gonna have any conceptual understanding of what I'm really fucking talking about are vets. It applies to them. But I want to talk about humans and shock and how we deal with shock, how we react to it, how we don't deal with shock, and use some serious and intimate moments of my life to connect to your life. That way mom and dad, brother and sister, Jack and Jane, normal people can put it into perspective. I just... got out of the shower washing blood off me from my dead dog that got killed on the side of the highway. It's the second one that I buried this year. Found him on the side of the highway with hit by a car with half his insides laying out and about. There's a lot of things I gotta go do when that happens. I gotta go down there, pick up the dog, transport it back up here, dig a grave, bury it. A lot of things occur to me when that happens. One most obvious thing is that death is death. It doesn't matter if it's a person, it doesn't matter if it's an animal. It's dead. And we all get just as dead. We all smell the same. We all look just as lifeless. Just as messy. Death is just death. Now, we'll tell you that I'm a little bit pissed off right now. And I'm a bit depressed right now. And that makes perfect sense. I haven't cried yet. In March, about, 8 months ago, my first dog got ran over. He wasn't on the side of the highway, he was in the middle of the highway. He was missing half his freaking skull. I still didn't get mad, I reacted. I did get mad, but I didn't cry, I reacted much the same way. It wasn't until he was finally actually in the grave and I'm sitting there looking at him, his corpse, in that hole, that I busted up, started tearing and crying. So I was in shock. I'm in shock right now, hence this conversation. It's obviously not the first time I've ever been in shock. In my life, a lot of different forms of shock. I'd been in an ATV accident where once I woke up, I was clearly in physical shock, and the person who was on the ATV with me was still passed out. Was it overly traumatic? No, not really. Was it serious? Yeah. I could have been very hurt. She could have been very hurt, and we could have been killed, honestly. I talked previously about PTSD, what PTSD is, maybe, or things that might describe types of PTSD in myself and in other people. I also talked about stress inoculation and about how important, how vital that is to warfighters, to the mission of a country fighting a war. It doesn't matter what they're fighting about. They have to be inoculated against stress. That's the first thing that Marine Corps does to you. As soon as you get on those white... I'm sorry, not white, but those yellow footprints. Whole world just blows up. And every single day, everything you do in your day is geared around inoculating you against stress. Well, stress and shock are not actually the same thing, but they're very closely related. They're very closely... We're born in much of the same shithole. and they live their life and show themselves in much of the same ways. But I would tell you that stress is something that happens, that occurs to you, and shock is your response, whether physical, religious, you know, your soul, or intellectual, emotionally. Your shock is a state of reaction to the event of that stress happening to you at all of its different levels. So I realize that there's a lot of people in my life that, or a lot of people I might meet who really don't know me, who might think that I'm kind of a cold bastard right now. Because I'm not crying, or I'm not praying up to God, asking why, God, why did you kill my dog? Okay. I'm the last person to tell you that animals don't matter. I very much love my dog. I love both of them. I loved all my animals. I love people. The tactical mindset tells me that I'm lucky. I go through my life and all I bury is animals. I'm a lucky son of a bitch. I go down there. There's my dog dead on the side of the highway. No, I'm not happy about it. I am grateful, however, that he's dead. That I don't have to go get a gun and stand there on the side of the highway. We got 300 people driving by every minute. And have some poor bastard watch me put a 45 shell on my dog's head. I'm grateful he didn't have to suffer. At least that long. He was dead when I got to him. I'm grateful that there wasn't some car mangled on the side of the highway, or two cars, or three cars, that some little girl or some little boy doesn't have mom and dad dead tonight. It'd be a lot worse. That's the tactical mindset that I take. Part of that maybe came from the Marine Corps, came from being stress inoculated. Okay, for instance, my brother really wanted to come out here and help dig a grave or console me or comfort me in some way, but there's reasons why he can't come out here, and he expressed his apologies and sympathies and regret for not being able to come out here. In all reality, this place that I live at, there's been enough bloodshed throughout the life that I've lived here, and a lot more in the lives of other people that lived here longer than I have. There's been very real blood spilled tonight. There's no reason to spill more blood. I'm the last person to add more blood to the pool out of sympathy, out of regret, out of mourning. And it's a very real analogy. Okay? We don't leave anybody behind. We all know that, right? Semper Fi, do or die, all that bullshit. We all hear that in movies and music and television. Soldiers don't leave other soldiers behind. Marines don't leave Marines behind, okay? You got a dead Marine out there. You got 10 dead Marines out there. I'm not going to leave them there. But at the same time, you don't just dump another 10 Marines on top of them. You think about it. You don't want to add more blood to it. You don't want to kill more people. You don't want to cause more gravity or pain, suffering, or loss in a situation, because there has been loss in that situation. So it's a way for me to analyze the situation that I'm in right now. Tonight, it's my dead dog. It's the second one that I buried. I got about 9 animals up there over the years. 2 of them did not need to be there this quickly. So this way for me to analyze the situation, for me to realize the gravity of it and realize that it could have been a lot worse. There could be some people dead right now, too, or hurt. You know, I feel sorry for the guy who hit him. His car's probably fucked up. But, surprised you paid to wake up in the morning, I guess. For me to be able to understand the situation allows me to be able to cope with it. Yeah, I'm a little bit agitated, though. I'm angry. I wish my dog was over here. Yesterday, he literally ate a 0.5 pound of cheese that I left out on the counter. I got pissed because he came back and was just gone. He ate my damn sandwich too. You know? My first dog died the day before he died. He busted out 200 pair of Oakleys of mine. I still have them and they're bent and scratched. I still wear them, but it's funny how those things really don't matter. You know, if I had another block of cheese to feed the dog, he was still here, I'd gladly do it, right? Well, if my first dog was still here, I'd gladly bust another $180 pair of Oakleys. These instincts are coping mechanisms. So it's fairly clear to me that I'm not sociopathic. I do invest, I do care, I do remember, I do hold dear to things. Okay? Despite the fact that we may develop sociopathic tendencies in order to engage in combat operations. Namely, being able to kill another person. It's the most obvious action, right? I want to hold off, pause, my dead dog and me burying my dog and me being in shock right now. Some other things have happened in the past couple of days that are honestly more grave and more severe magnitude to me personally than burying my dog tonight. Before I get into that, I'm going to tell you after I got back from my first deployment, I had two deployments. My first deployment was a real deployment. It was a real combat deployment. Okay, if we hit IEDs, we didn't drive over them. I walked over them. So much of the changes in my psyche had definitely already occurred. Okay. Well, I was 18 when I joined the Marine Corps. I turned 19 in boot camp. I deployed the first time in March of 2007. I was 20. Just turned 20 in December. Long story made very short. I proposed to my best friend on the last training operation at Schofield Barracks, Hawaii Army Base, via the phone, because she was in California and I was in Hawaii. Basic fact was I was scared shitless. I was about to deploy to a real combat zone, the most kinetically violent area of operation in that country at that point in time. Shit was real. It wasn't a joke about it. It wasn't training anymore. It wasn't a game. It wasn't a fantasy. It wasn't fuck you, fuck me games of let's see who can outsmart and outwit and out mentally battle the other Marine. All that game, all that shit was adding up to, hey, a couple weeks, you're going to be boots on deck in a real combat zone. You don't have a fucking clue what's going to happen to you, okay? So I proposed to her. If nothing else, I had somebody that would love me when I came home. Okay. Did I love her? Yes. Did I know her? Yeah. We'd been best friends for years. The fuck do I know, though? I'm 20 years old. She was 19. Okay. Yeah, we all think we know everything, right? Yeah. We don't. Anyway, I came back from that deployment. Got a house on base. Our relationship lasted exactly 6 months until Easter of 08. And I'm not going to get into why, but basically, I had to cut that marriage out. Otherwise, I was in very real danger politically from the Marine Corps of fucking my entire life. And even then, I couldn't be married to the woman anyway, so I had to make the tactical decision to pull the trigger on my own wife. Okay? I very much so went into shock. I went into so much shock that I didn't have a fucking clue I was in shock. I literally treated it like it was an operation, like it was a mission. That was the first day I'd ever smoked. I'd never smoked before. I came home and saw her and realized what I had to do and left. And I drove for hours around Kaneohe Bay. And I chain smoked 4 1/4 packs of Marlboro menthols before I came back in, walked in the door and looked at her and told her that it was over. And then I watched her, 20-year-old girl sitting in my bed, laying there, my wife, start bawling to death, choking on her own spit and her own tongue. Telling me I don't want her anymore. So yeah, I was in shock. I was in shock so much that for that period of time in my life, I wasn't a good person. I don't mean that to be dramatic. What I mean is I didn't go out and try to hurt people. I just didn't give a shit if I did hurt somebody. I didn't take any actions, any precautionary actions, to be sensitive enough to give a fuck if I hurt somebody. I never knew it then, but I look up in the sky and I thank God now that no one ever aggressively challenged me when I was in that period of my life. Because I was a very dangerous person at that point. I was very much in shock. And I did not cry. It took me about 2+ months to cry, to shed one single fucking tear. And when I did, it was the darkest day I've ever lived. That was a day I literally walked through hell. I walked through hell with this, in all means, this little girl. She's a 19-year-old college girl from Cali. Now she's the closest woman, the closest person I have in my life. She's honestly closer to me than my mother is. And that's not a detest to my mother. It's just what it is. We happened to be driving her back to her dorm room from base. I realized that I had no money in my account again, because my wife had taken all my fucking money. And here I am, a corporal in the Marine Corps, 21 years old, back from one combat mission, back from one combat deployment. And I can't even fucking eat or put gas in my car, because I have no money at all. And I have responsibilities in the Marine Corps. What the fuck am I supposed to do? So I called her. And this person, Stephanie, was in my car with me. She didn't know me. She knew I was a Marine. She knew, you know, I'm 21 years old and I'm a guy and she thinks I'm attractive. And all she knows is I'm divorced. She doesn't know anything about my marriage. She has no idea that I literally just left my wife. I just packed up my house and sold and threw away everything that I worked for. She didn't know any of that. She just knew I was hurt and, you know, kind of that Billy Badass type, I guess. But she heard my wife's voice on the phone, and she watched me have a full-blown psychiatric meltdown. I finally lost it. I finally caved in. And I didn't just dive into a couple layers of shock. I went from tactical and coherent to suicidal. And I didn't know it. I had no control over it. I lost every bit of humanity that I had in me. Every bit of solace, every bit of strength, every bit of composure. Pretty much every fucking liquid I had in my body too. I didn't realize it until just recently, to be honest with you. Looking back on some things that happened to my brother, the same brother that couldn't come out here, he at one point in time found himself on a bridge, snapped back out of it, and checked himself in the psychiatric ward. His girlfriend at the time had aborted his baby. And I remember him telling me about this, that he had no idea he was doing what he was doing. He never, the thought of killing himself, the thought of death and suicide never actually crossed his mind. It was never a plan or an action. It was just what he was doing. And at some point, he snapped out of it at the last second and realized what he was doing. And realized, holy hell, I'm not okay. Checked himself in a psychiatric ward, okay? That was when I was a teenager. So now I'm bringing back to me, in my life, up until about 5 days ago, I had no idea that I had gone through the same process. I remember it vividly now, walking out of that gas station, because I couldn't drive. I was going to crash the car, and I remember pulling off to the last exit before we had to go up the H3, up through the mountain, down into Honolulu. I pulled off in Kaneohe, the closest gas station possible, and Steph got out of the car. She was crying. She was scared shitless. She should have been scared of me. She had every right in the world to be deathly afraid of me. She should have been, and she was. She hid behind a propane tank, I don't know for how long. She was crying and shivering and sobbing. I finally ended my conversation and didn't have any tears left. Wiped the spit and the saliva off my face and my clothes and walked into the gas station and paid the gas station attendant money. I remember not even looking at the person in their eyes, which is very unusual for me. If you know me, you know I look at everybody. I look them right in the eyes. It's a dominance thing. It's a confidence thing. I didn't even look at that fucking person. And I remember walking out. I had a very brief notion that that might be the last human being I ever see. I did not expect Stephanie to be anywhere around. I expect her to run to the nearest payphone or taxi or friend or anything other than this monstrous Marine in this car driving over a mountain. And I didn't blame her. I hadn't realized it, but going back to shock, I was in a state of physical shock where my senses had shut down. I really couldn't feel my body. I really didn't have a fluid motion of my body. I didn't move very well. I could see, but my sight was clouded though. I remember not focusing on anything that was beyond my immediate vision. It's like I had no peripherals. Like I just didn't. I don't know that I didn't see my peripheral vision, but I wasn't aware of it. I didn't use it. I remember that very distinctly because I hit my shoulder on the doorway walking out. And I didn't feel it. I'm sure my body felt it. My brain never processed the feeling of any kind of discomfort or pain. And I don't remember hearing anything. I don't have any idea if the gas station attendant was saying anything to me. I don't remember hearing the traffic going by in front of the gas station. And I don't remember hearing Stephanie crying. What I remember is thinking that I could very well walk out in the middle of that traffic. For some reason, I still had enough tenacity in me and enough intelligence in me to realize, no, don't do that. The path that I was on was the path to drive that car another mile and a half up the H3, up into the mountain pass, and there's a lookout there, and I would have driven or walked right the fuck off of that. The thought of suicide never crossed my mind. The thought of calling somebody never crossed my mind. The thought of loving somebody never crossed my mind. My then 3.5-year-old niece, Madeline, never crossed my mind then. Nothing crossed my mind. It was not myself. I was not me. It was a full psychiatric break. This was shock, exploited, and gone to the most that I have ever personally experienced in my life. Maybe it's not the most dramatic shock possible, but it's the most that I have ever been able to articulate. That girl, 19-year-old college girl in first year away from home, out and about enjoying life like she should be, had choices to make. And she should have been completely afraid of me, and she wasn't. She was, but I mean, it didn't make her run for me. She actually got in the car with me. Saved my life by doing so, to be honest with you. She actually comforted me. She didn't fucking know me. She'd kiss me, probably slept with me, maybe, I don't remember. Hugged me. Probably didn't know much about anything about me other than the fact that I was a dude. I was a Marine. I was 21 and had a wife at some point in time. And I just came back from war. She had no investment in me. No reason to care, let alone to save me, let alone to risk her own personal safety. And don't get me wrong. If you asked me, I would never tell you I'd ever harm her. I'd never thought about harming her. But the tactical person inside of me tells me that I was very much a very dangerous threat to her. And she still comforted me. I don't remember what she said. I remember the look on her face. She was an angel. That was the first angel that I had ever seen in front of me that I knew for a fact was an angel. My belief in God is definitely questionable. Of what God, what he looks like, what he is, who he is, what version of him. But I knew beyond any doubt, it's definitely an angel. That's one instance of shock. Compare that with my dog today. A couple days ago, the same woman, Stephanie, came out and saw me from California, kind of on a very surprised visit for a couple of days, for about 4 or 5 days. She's been in a pretty serious relationship for 3 years. Why? Because I'm a dumb fuck. Because when I came back from Iraq the second time, I got scared and I realized I was in love with her, and I didn't know what to do. I was more scared of that than I was of dying. I was a lot more scared of that than I was of some fucking Haji trying to kill me. So I let her go, and guess what? She went. She moved the fuck on like half a dozen other women in my life. Well, I had never thought I ever had a chance with her. Honestly, I thought I'd made my bed, and now I'm sleeping in my bed. So I've been trying to disprove it. I've been trying to bury her, replace her, corrupt our relationship, and maybe corrupt her relationship. I've been doing a lot of things because I'm not always a good person over the years to try and nullify the fact that one woman in my life that I am completely in love with, utterly in love with, is not mine. That's pretty big to swallow, guys. It's the largest hurdle in my life that I have ever personally experienced. Much larger than anything the Marine Corps has ever thrown at me. martial law gym than some fucking Islamic extremist has ever thrown at me. Well, I never thought I ever had a chance with her. So I've just buried it. I've lied to her, to be honest with you. I've lied to her, I've lied to other people. I've used other people to bury and replace her. Well, the situation was that things have come to not an end, but definitely to a new level in her relationship of gravity. She's got to make some decisions. And I finally realized that I had a glimpse. I had a glimmer of hope that this woman was still in love with me. And she'd been denying it this whole time, too. It's always been something bad in my relationships. I've had two different girlfriends that have told me that I was still in love with her. And that's been a problem, a cause of contempt with those girlfriends. And she's been doing the same thing for years. So she finally told me she was still in love with me. But that she doesn't know what that means. She doesn't know how it's possible. She doesn't know what to do. She's very much in love with the person she's with. He's a good guy. He's not me. He's nothing like me. So be it. So she's torn. Well, I decided to not do what I did 3.5 years ago and lock up and not tell her. I finally took a risk. I literally risked everything that I have and everything that I am to tell this woman the most intimate and fragile thoughts and feelings and moments of my life to her. She knows she's my angel. She knows she upset my life. She knows all that. She knows I love her. I'm sure she knew I was in love with her. And she's always told me she loved me, but she's never told me she's in love with me. She's always loved me as a friend. Well, she left. She went back home, obviously. She's got life, you know, job and school and life to take care of. And I haven't lost her. I haven't gained her either. Some things that have been said, things that I've done, things that I've said, not out of any malice or hatred or ill will, but out of honesty. I needed to get those things off my chest. There's definitely a chance that I could lose her. And at one point in time, she said that if her significant other had told her to, she would slit my throat. And at that moment, precisely that moment, I was at a job fair in Portland for Hiring Our Heroes. I was outside looking at this memorial of about 500 names in front of a water fountain that said, to those who have given the greatest sacrifice for God, for principle, for country. I got that text message and read those words. And it was probably the most hurtful thing that I have ever read or ever heard from anybody. And I literally treated it, looking back on it now, analytically, I literally treated that moment exactly the same way I treated the first moment that I ever realized I had rounds impacting by my head. I blocked everything off. Cut everything off. And I became okay with death. I told myself I could die right now. I'm okay with that. Because I'm done being afraid of dying. I'm not going to proceed and do whatever it is I'm about to go fucking do. Willing to die. That could also very well be a form of shock and a form of me dealing with a type of shock. Now, I have imagined my death hundreds of times in two different countries in many different ways. I wouldn't say fantasized about it because I don't take any particular enjoyment out of it, but I have come to grips with how I could die, how I would most likely die. I've learned not to fear it. I don't have a way, and even telling you this now, I still am not imagining it. I don't have a way to imagine my life if she was literally cut out of my life. I don't have a way to imagine that. That is too much for me. That's not a shock, that's not a stress, that's not an event that I can deal with. I can honestly tell you that I would rather be dead than that happen. That too has to be a shock. That has to be something manageable, though. Has to be something that I'm not actually gonna die, and I don't think. I guess it could give me a heart attack and I could die. It's possible, I guess, biologically speaking. The thought of living through that, living through her making the decision to null me and cut me out of her life. The same woman, the angel that saved my life, literally saved my fucking life. My physical life, as well as my spiritual, my emotional life, would now be indirectly taking my soul or my heart, my emotional life away from me. My reaction to that stress level, I imagine, would be that I would honestly want to die. And if I look over animals, I look over people, I look over all the things that I've seen in my life and studied, when we want to die, we don't necessarily kill ourselves, but we know it's coming. Other people know it's coming. Other animals know when other animals are dying. And the first dog that I ever remember died, he was sick for months, and he was old and fat and hairy and unhealthy. He was an old man. We went to church one day, and I remember telling my mom I had the feeling that Sandy's dead. We came back, and he'd dug himself a nice little hole between the concrete foundation of the house and the patio and died in that hole. We knew it was coming. I see this in my father. I've seen this in myself. When I feel like I want to punish myself or I want to die, I become reckless. I engage in acts that now increase the likelihood of me being hurt. Is that a reaction to stress? Is that shock? I definitely think it's shock. I think it's a form of shock. I think it's a poor, however natural and reasonable, understandable reaction to shock. I think it's more of an autonomous reaction to shock, where we don't necessarily know what we're doing. We're not necessarily coherent. For instance, me walking out of the gas station. Suicide never crossed my mind, but I can tell you, I can promise you, that if Stephanie was not in that car, this book, this voice recording, the book I published, my life wouldn't exist right now. I would be dead. I know that with my whole heart. So what is shock? How do we deal with shock? What makes us cold bastards? What makes us machines? People like to think that Marines are machines. I can't tell you how many fucking times somebody I love has told me that and it has hurt me. You're a machine. I don't understand you. I don't understand how you can do that. No, I'm not a machine. I'm a person. I'm a man. There isn't Marine and Kristen. There isn't Marine mode. Kristen and Marine are the same fucking thing. There isn't a mode I switch on and off, okay? Maybe that's true for other people. Maybe they can switch it on and off. It's not true for me. My guess is that most people, most devil dogs, it's what the fuck they are. There isn't two personalities here. There isn't two different sets. It isn't armor they put on and armor they take off. When you tell us that you're like a machine, oh, you're acting like a Marine now. No, fuck you, we're not. I'm acting like me. I am me. I'm one and the same person. It's very important. The Marine Corps inoculates us against stress. It's not that we don't experience shock. The basic premise of the Marine Corps inoculating us against stress is that while under extreme stress, duress, shock, exposure, we have a whole bunch of verbs to describe this, but when we're severely hurt or about to be hurt, that we maintain a level of operational proficiency, that we can operate mechanically. And the likelihood isn't that we need to just operate mechanically. We don't just need to walk and talk and shit and eat. We need to be able to operate at a very intense level while under that shock. Case in point, a firefight. Okay? So that's shock. It's definitely shock. Auditory goes away. Taste goes away. Depth goes away. Sound blurs goes away. Senses hone in. Okay, you're definitely in shock. But instead of fucking pulling my pants down and grabbing my dick and running off and crying and screaming, oh my god, don't kill me. We don't do that. We stand up. We lock onto the target. We engage the target tactically and proficiently. And we kill it. We don't kill it for show. It isn't a blockbuster movie. It's not some kung fu fucking fight for 4 hours. Quickly and efficiently locate, neutralize it. So it's not that we don't experience shock. It's that how we act in shock might be different than those who are not combat veterans, who are not warfighters, maybe who are not Marines. You can apply whatever group or lifestyle or trait you want. But I would submit to you that I experience shock just the same fucking way you do. At a lot of levels, man. I don't like being rejected. I work in sales for a living. I deal with people saying, fuck you, go away, all the time. Okay? I've had more than my fair share of people I've been in love with reject me. I fear rejection just like you do. I'm a 25-year-old, 200-plus-pound alpha male for the two combat tours in the Marine Corps. And sometimes, I don't have enough balls to ask a girl her name. Why is that? Well, because it's pretty easy to pull a fucking trigger and kill somebody. It's a lot harder to ask a girl what her name is and have her reject you. That's why. Look, I'm human too. We all are. I bet you there's some of the vets out there who just laughed right now, because it's true. My goal with this book is to not just talk about this Hollywood fantasy world that is so unique and so unconnected, disconnected from most of us, that it's like a fucking fantasy. It's like entertainment. Like you're reading about a story in this world that doesn't exist because you've never experienced it. My goal is to bring those things back here, home, to you, to me, to mom, to dad, to brother, to sister, and so forth, and connect the gap between warfighter and bus driver, bank teller, construction worker, stay-at-home mom, student, put it in terms that you can understand. We all experience shock. It's what we do in that shock. Not machines, we're very much human. We have just been honed and trained a little bit more than you have to deal in a more mechanically proficient way in the heat of the moment to deal with that shock than you have. But like it happened when I buried my first dog, I didn't cry for an hour and a half until his corpse was sitting there with half his skull gone and in this grave I dug 5 feet below. Did I start crying? I started crying like crazy. Well, a couple hours, an hour and a half, 2 hours, that's nothing compared to the 2 months, 2.5 months it took me for the breakdown when I left my wife in front of Stephanie. So I'm not saying that it's necessarily a good thing that we are geared and can operate at such a high level of stress in such a shocking environment so proficiently, so resiliently, or so marine, if you will. It is good. It's vital to the mission. Okay? If we all fucking broke down and went into catatonic shock in the middle of a firefight, hello, our country would A, not exist anymore, and B, we'd all be dead. By we all, I mean us vets. And honestly, half of you. So it's needed for the mission for us to act like this. It's very much needed for the mission. When I go and I talk to my psychiatrist in the VA, she sympathizes and counsels me and tells me that I will never ever be able to unwire what's been wired. I will not ever change who I am or what I am. That Kristen and Marine all really are the same thing. I have developed traits, ways of thinking, the ways of feeling, the ways of acting that have very literally kept me and other people alive. That is now a survival instinct in its core. It is ingrained into the fibers, the molecules in my body, that I will never be able to unwire that. Well, I'll submit to you that I can't. I can work on it, though. I can try and I can think. I can try and soften the edges. I can try and educate the people around me that love me. My mom, my dad, my brother, Stephanie. To be able to understand and compute and communicate with me. Because that's ultimately what's so important here. With relationships with other people is communication. Well, communication is vastly important. But if I speak French and you speak freaking Islam, Arabic, hey, we can sit here and bitch at each other all we want, but no one understands anything. We understand some basic things. We understand joy. We understand laughter. We understand pain. We understand fear. Those are universal things. But we don't understand context and depth. Okay? So part of warfighter is also to try to establish a means of effective communication between different people, between combat veterans, between veterans who are non-combat, between non-service members, between family members, between Joe Blow, who's never been connected to the military in his entire fucking life, except for Modern Warfare 3 and Navy SEAL movies, which completely tell you everything and completely educate you. This, something I had realized when Stephanie left, I had not looked myself in the eyes. I had not seen my own face for a couple days since she got here. I'd just been too busy. I'd never actually seen my face. And she left. I dropped her off at the airport, and I said goodbye and gave her a hug. I got back in my Mustang and trying to reverse, and I'm looking in the rear view. And I actually stalled. I got a Mustang GT manual. I actually stalled the damn thing because I just kept looking at myself in the rear view mirror. I wasn't looking behind me. I was looking at myself. Something changed in my face. I couldn't tell you what it was. It wasn't a scar. You know, maybe it was poetic. Maybe I'd become more weathered or matured or something. But something changed. The way I looked, the way I saw a change in me. This is less than 12 hours after being completely naked and dumping everything that this warfighter, this marine, this man, this machine, to some of you, had on this girl. I watched her sit there and cry. Her beautiful cheeks crunch up and her eyes tear up. I remember those things. I will always remember those things. I had literally given myself to her. The most fragile, intimate, neurotic, sincere, and beautiful thoughts and feelings that I had had. And I had honestly wanted to repent and pay my price. Because I loved the woman more than my own life. I thought the bravest thing that anyone could do would actually be to be willing to fight, be willing to die. And God, I thank him every day that I am not one of those names etched on that memorial, that I am not dead. And I know I'm not the only one. Each and every single one of you, if you're not, you need to punch yourself in the face and look up and thank God that you're not dead. I had given her everything. That's such a responsibility for that young, beautiful woman to deal with. I remember sometimes not even being able to look in the eyes. I had to go walk away. I just had to go walk because I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to think. I didn't know what to feel. I was crying. I was angry. I was confused. I wasn't sure if what I was doing was right or wrong. I had no idea if it was right or wrong. It certainly wasn't fair. It's like I was reliving that night again. But this girl, this young woman now, this beautiful young woman that I've been so in love with and I've tried to lie about and bury for years. Standing there, I remember the look in her eyes. She was so beautiful. She was so frail. She needed an angel to come down and wrap her rings around her and protect her. And out of respect for her and her wishes and her relationship, which I don't honestly agree with because I'm a man and I'm made of flesh, and I can't help that I want what I want, I didn't wrap my arms and my wings around her. I didn't think I could touch her. But I had finally given everything. Maybe it's what it feels like to confess to a priest. I don't know. I've never confessed before. But tonight, I had made the comment that something did change in me. I had seen something change. I didn't know if it was a scar or I was more weathered or what, but something changed. And I've sat down and I just wrote a poem, a very long poem, specifically talking about her and that night in my life and me and how I feel. It's probably the most heartfelt thing that I have written since I concluded the Blood and Ink 4 years ago. And I had realized that what I saw wasn't damage or battle scars or me being weathered or more mature, more older in my face. What I saw was fragility in my eyes. And finally, for the first time in my nearly 26 years of existence, which honestly seems like 86 years, I had finally seen fragility in my own eyes. And I remember the hotel room in April of 2009 when I realized that I was in love with Stephanie. I would really realize that I was actually in love with her. I remember thinking, I need to do the right thing. I'm poisoned. I'm going to hurt this girl. I can't use her. I can't manipulate her. I can't exploit her. I can't do anything that would ever make me think that I'm taking advantage of her. I love her. I was scared to death of that. Scared to death of hurting her. Because I was too, here's the cliche, I was too marine. I was too machine. Maybe in the past couple of days, like my psychiatrist had mentioned, I can't unwire the things that have been wired into me. I have them for survival, but I can think about them. I can try to understand them. I can exploit them, and actually trying to build a means of communication. I can't change them. I can't get rid of them or unwire them. But I can seek to understand them better. Maybe that's what I was doing. Maybe that's what Stephanie allowed me to do. To finally confide all those precious, beautiful, fragile, and decadent feelings I had wrapped inside of me. And in doing that, maybe I shed my warrior skin. Maybe I shed that thick, brutal, inhuman, soulless body armor that was wrapped around me that she had pleaded with me for years to let down. I realized I was fragile. I'm a war fighter. I've been to war. I've fought in war. I'm a man. I'm an uncle. I'm an ex-husband. Regretfully, I am not a father. I'm a son. I'm a brother. And I am fragile. Just like you. I'm not only fragile in war. I'm fragile here. At home. When my dog dies. And I have to pick up its body and its guts and stick it in the back of my truck and drive up a hill and dig a fucking grave next to the other dead animals and bury them. I'm fragile when I lose what I had thought to be the most important relationship in my life, my wife. I'm fragile, physically fragile. I'm emotionally fragile. I'm intellectually fragile. I'm spiritually fragile. God, I believe in you. I don't know where you're at, but I believe in him. And that needs to, I need to build strength physically. I'm probably going to end up going to the gym after this. Oh, I need to go to the spiritual gym too. I need to go to the emotional gym. In a lot of ways, I'm in the intellectual and emotional gym right now, discussing these things with you, sharing this with other people. I am a man of flesh and blood. I don't know what's fair, I don't know what's right, and truth be told, I would rather be dead than have Stephanie not in my life. And truth be told, I would rather do the wrong thing and do the thing that is not fair. I would rather put pain and stress and pressure on her, and I would rather cut another man's love out of his life, that way I could have that love in my life. That is how I know that there has to be a God, because God has to be better than me. I am imperfect, I am frail, fragile, I am strong, I'm a warrior. I'm a good man at heart. Good intentions. I'm a decent man. But I'm a man. Maybe I'm a hero to some people. Maybe I'm a hero to a lot of people. But I'm by no means a machine. I experience loss, tragedy, and shock. Pain, love, compassion, empathy, acceptance, in peace, just like you do. We are not taboo. We are not these transcending beings from another world or another place that you can't relate to. I cut my wrist right now and I bleed just like you do. My blood looks exactly the same as my dead dog's does. The shit I just wiped off myself and down my shower drain. I am very much human. I am fragile. I am beautiful. I am fierce. I am like you, capable of so much good. I am capable of so much bad. I am equally capable of feeling and experiencing so much love and oh, so much pain and loss. Let these moments, these scars, these moments of fragility in their eyes, these dead dogs buried on top of your hill, these situations in life, love lost, and lust plundered, count as remembrances, signs and reasons for us to remember and embrace the ones that we love. Cherish the moments. Accept each other. And fight. Absolutely fight until your dying breath for what you believe in and love in. And you will experience shock. That shock is applicable to all of us, to you and to me. We are human. We are warriors, but we are human. Marine, soldier, airman, seaman, Coast Guard, I don't give a fuck. We're all human. We bleed just like you. We love just like you, and we die just like you.